was a lock of my hair, tied together with a slim pink satin ribbon. I got goosebumps on my arm, and a chill ripped through my stomach. The shock was short-lived, and I went back into bravado mode. Okay, I told myself, so that solves the mystery of the missing hair. I was sitting in the living room with my coffee and the note when Morelli came down the stairs. He was freshly shaved, and his hair was still damp. He was dressed in jeans and boots and a black t-shirt, and if I hadn't just had the mother of all orgasms, I would have attacked him and lured him back to bed.
I saw the flowers on the sideboard, Morelli said.
I handed him the card. They were left on the porch this morning. They were on top of the paper, so the webmaster stopped around when it was daylight. Maybe someone saw him.
He's taking chances, Morelli said. He's glorying in his success, and that's going to make him careless.
Something to look forward to.
I'll have the neighborhood canvassed.
Morelli read the note.
Sick, he said.
I took a shower and did the best I could with my hair, pushing it behind my ears, lacquering it up with hairspray. I'd get a cut as soon as possible, but I hadn't a clue what could possibly be done with it. I looked close in the mirror. Extensions, maybe? Hair weave? Morelli was on the phone when I came downstairs. He glanced at his watch and ended his conversation when he saw me. Morelli was ready to roll. The day had started without him. That's what happens when you're a sex fiend.
I was talking to Ed Silver, Morelli said. We just got the report back from the state techs. They were able to recover some email from Singh's computer. And the email corroborates what you learned last night. There were 5 players and the webmaster. We know Fishercat was last man standing, so we're missing a dead player.
Do you know any more about how the game is played?
One of the emails spelled out the rules. The webmaster conducts the game. Players only use their game names and can communicate with each other only through the webmaster, so the webmaster always knows all. The webmaster gives out clues about the players' identities, and the hunt begins. All players know from the beginning that there will only be one man standing at the end of the game. All players know there's no pulling out once the game has begun. Pulling out marks a player for assassination.
Singh.
Yeah, it looks like Singh was assassinated. The game began a full month before you got involved. You might have been the prize from the very beginning. Or the webmaster might have changed the prize midway. Or maybe the webmaster didn't feel any rush to designate a prize until the game was underway.
And I happened along. Morelli shrugged.
No way to know. You're a good prize. Bounty hunter. The webmaster had to come up with something to top the cop. The prize isn't mentioned in any of the emails to Singh. The rules were that the webmaster only gave up the prize to the last man standing.
And the webmaster?
That's the bad news. No clue to the webmaster. His emails are, so far, untraceable. And he hasn't given away anything of himself. There were some messages to Singh about his disappearance, requesting that he return to finish the game, warning of the consequences. And there were a couple earlier messages that got the game going. Player names and hunt clues.
Is Bart Cohn still a suspect?
Everyone's a suspect. Cohn is high up on the list.
What about the other victims' computers?
We were never able to find Rosen's or Howie's computer.
Fishercat's?
Fishercat's name is Stephen Klein, 19 years old, worked at Larry's video rental and lived with his parents. The state has a team going through the parents' house, but so far as I know, the computer hasn't turned up yet.
I glanced at the newspaper I dropped onto the coffee table. Klein's picture was on the front page. To be more precise, Klein's sneakers were on the front page, because the rest of him was hidden behind a couple cops and a back shot of me standing hands on hips, head down. My hair didn't look good.
Crap, I said.
Morelli looked down at the photo. He raised his eyes and looked over at me.
Did you get a new haircut?
Yeah, somewhere between getting shot and posing for this newspaper picture. I guess you didn't look in the envelope. Morelli took the envelope off the coffee table and looked inside. Morelli's usually pretty good at hiding emotion, but the lock of hair pushed a button that was beyond his range of control. Color rose in his cheeks, and he slashed out at a table lamp, hitting it with his closed fist, sending it flying across the room to smash against the wall. Bob was curled into a big Bob ball at the end of the couch, sound asleep. He levitated 6 inches off the couch when the lamp crashed, and he ran for the kitchen. "Feel better?" I asked Morelli.
"No."
"Do you have anything else for me?"
Klein, Rosen, Singh, Parisi were all shot at fairly close range. Howie was shot across a parking lot. Even using a laser scope, there's still a skill level required to put a .22 between someone's eyes at a distance. Someone in the Carnation and Roses group is a very good shot. I'm guessing it's the webmaster. A possible scenario is that you discovered Howie's identity, and the webmaster had to take him out or risk having the game blown. And then maybe the webmaster discovered he liked killing and decided to insert himself into the game as a player.
Was Bart Cohn in the military? Does he belong to a gun club?
Never in the military. No gun club that we know of.
Morelli did another watch check.
We have to roll.
I did a fast scan for Ranger's man when I got outside, but I couldn't spot any shiny new black cars. Morelli beeped his truck unlocked.
If you're looking for your rent-a-thug, I told Ranger you'd be with me this morning.
Did he make you take a blood oath that you'd protect me?
He asked me if I had adequate health insurance.
The rain had stopped, and Jersey was steaming. Grass was growing, and oil-slicked puddles were evaporating. Another hour, and the sun would be bright in the sky, shimmering in the ozone haze. It was a terrific day for sandals, but I was wearing sneakers because it's hard to run fast in sandals. And I thought there was a good possibility that I might have to run fast today. I wasn't sure if I would be running from the webmaster or running after the webmaster. No matter which, I was prepared. Ranger wore the eye of the tiger. He was always in the zone. I felt like I was in the zone today. Of course, there was the possibility that I was just delusional after the phenomenal sex, but what the hell? Whatever the reason, I felt okay, and I was hardly thinking about the lock of hair. Well, all right, maybe I was thinking about it a little. The Trenton Cop Shop is located on Perry Street and will never be mistaken for Beverly Hills PD. No potted palms or stylish mauve carpet. Mauve carpet doesn't hold up under pepper spray-induced snot. Morelli brought me into a small room with a table and two chairs. He plugged in a tape recorder and punched the on button. I looked around and was ready to confess to anything. Just being in the grim little room under the flickering fluorescent lights made me feel guilty. I walked my way through the conversation with Stephen Klein, giving as much detail as I could recall. When we got to the part where I was zapped unconscious, Morelli shut the machine off and called Ranger.
"She's all yours," Morelli said to Ranger.
Morelli disconnected and looked over at me.
That was a figure of speech.
Ranger was driving a black Porsche Carrera. He was wearing black cargo pants, a black T-shirt that looked like it was painted onto his biceps, black Bates boots, and a Glock in full view on his hip. Ranger was in bodyguard mode. "Couldn't coerce any of your men into babysitting me?" I asked him. He cut his eyes to me, and he didn't exactly smile, but he didn't look unhappy either.
"You're all mine today, babe."
It sounded different when Ranger said it. "I don't know what your plans are for the day," I said to Ranger, "but my plan is to go to the mall and beg for hair help. I'm finding it hard to maintain the eye of the tiger when my hair is lopsided." On the way to the mall, I filled Ranger in on the game. "It has to be Bart Cohn," I said. "Someone sent Stephen Klein to Vegas to eliminate Singh, and there were only a couple people who knew Singh was in Vegas. Cohn was one of them."
"It could also be someone Cohn's talking to," Ranger said. "There are three brothers, and they all have friends and associates. I'm sure the police have cast a wide net around them, but it wouldn't hurt for you to talk to the Cohns. Sometimes a man will share information with a woman that he wouldn't think to give to a cop."
Ranger parked at a mall entrance, and we walked through the mall to the salon. We passed a Victoria's Secret along the way, and I couldn't resist giving Ranger the test. "Suppose I wanted to look for a thong," I said to Ranger. "Would you come into the store with me?" Ranger did the almost smile.
"Are we cutting a deal?"
"Everything's a deal with you."
"I'm a mercenary," Ranger said. "What's your point?"
"For a couple years now, I've been getting my hair cut by Mr. Alexander. The guy's name is Alexander Dubkowski, but no one calls him Al or Alex or even Alexander. It's Mr. Alexander, if you want a decent cut." We walked into the salon, and Mr. Alexander looked our way and sucked in some air. Not only did I have a hair disaster of biblical proportions, I was with the man from SWAT, and the man from SWAT made people nervous. "I had a hair accident," I said to Mr. Alexander. "Do you have time to fix it?" Mr. Alexander went pale under his tanning salon tan, probably afraid Ranger would shoot up the place if I didn't get an immediate appointment. "I have a few minutes between clients," he said, motioning me into a chair, draping a cape around me. He did some hair fluffing with his fingers. He bit his lower lip. "I'm going to have to cut," he said. Panic. "It's not going to be real short, is it? How about a weave or something?" "I'm good, but I'm not God," he said. "It's going to have to get cut." I blew out a sigh of resignation. "Fine. Cut." "Close your eyes," he said. "I'll tell you when it's done." I opened an eye halfway through, and he quickly turned the chair so I wasn't facing the mirror. "No cheating," he said. When he was done, he spun me around, and we both stopped breathing. It was short, longer in the back, curling along the nape of my neck, short enough on the sides to have my ears show, a few wispy bangs over my forehead, and the whole thing looking slightly mussed and wind-tossed. Ranger came and stood behind me, checking me out.
"Cute," he said.
"Last time my hair was this short, I was 4 years old." When we were back in the car, I turned to Ranger. "Is it really cute, or were you just trying to keep me from shrieking?" He ran a hand through my hair.
"It's sexy," he said.
And he kissed me, tongue and everything. "Hey," I said, "we're not supposed to be doing that." A smile hovered at the edges of his mouth.
"Morelli told me you were all mine today."
"That was a figure of speech. He trusts us." Ranger turned the key in the ignition.
"He trusts you. I haven't signed on to the Trust Me program."
"How about me? Can I trust you?"
"Are we talking about your life or your body?"
I already knew the answer, so I moved on. "Where are we going?"
"Tribro."
20 minutes later, Ranger was in the industrial park where Tribro was located. He pulled into a parking lot for a moving and storage company and cut the engine. I looked over. "What's up?" He reached behind me and snagged a black molded plastic box with a snap closure.
"I'm going to wire you. I want to make sure you're safe in there."
"You're not going in?"
"No one will talk to you if I'm along."
I raised an eyebrow. Ranger did the almost grin thing again.
"Sometimes people find me to be a little scary."
"No, shocking. You ever think about losing the gun? Or dressing normal?" He opened the box and removed a matchbook-sized recorder.
"I have an image to maintain."
I was wearing a black tank top and jeans. The jeans were hot, but they covered the bruises and scratches on my legs. Not much I could do to hide the bandage on my arm. My heart did a once-over, knowing where the wire was going to get taped. "I don't think I need a wire," I said. Ranger pulled my shirt out of my jeans and slid his hands under the shirt.
"You're not going to ruin this for me, are you? I've been looking forward to this."
He secured the recorder against my breastbone, just below my bra, with two crisscrossed pieces of surgical tape. The wire with the pinhead microphone ran between my breasts.
"Ready to rock and roll," Ranger said.
He spun the Porsche out of the moving and storage lot and into the Tribro lot.
Let's take stock here. I've got my go-fast feet sneakers on, and I'm wired for sound. I've got pepper spray and a stun gun in my purse. And I'm cloaked in an invisible, invincible protective shield. Okay, so I lied about the shield. Still, 4 out of 5 isn't too bad, right? I crossed the lot and entered the building. I gave a big smile and hello to the receptionist and got waved through to Andrew. Andrew gave me the hero's welcome.
Way to go! You found him. The office called about an hour ago.
Yeah, but he was dead.
Dead or alive makes no difference to me. All right, I know that's heartless, but I didn't really know him. And you saved me a lot of money. I would have been out the bond if it wasn't for you.
Unfortunately, your problems aren't over. Singh was involved in a killing game. All game members are dead now, with the exception of the game organizer. And I'm pretty sure the game organizer works at Tribro.
Andrew went perfectly still, and the color drained from his face.
You're kidding, right?
I shook my head. I'm serious.
The police have been around talking to us, but no one ever said anything about a killing game.
I shrugged. Andrew got up and shut his office door.
Are you sure about this? This isn't another witch hunt like the one Bart went through. That was a nightmare, and nothing ever came of it.
Lillian Parisi was a player in a previous killing game.
What?
Color was returning to his face, the shock morphing to disbelief and anger.
That's ridiculous. That's the most insane thing I've ever heard. Why wasn't any of this brought out by the police?
They didn't know at the time.
But they know now?
Yes.
Then why aren't they here? He asked.
I did a palms up. Guess I got here first.
When you say you suspect the organizer of this game works at Tribro, does that include me and my brothers in your list of suspects?
Up to this point, I hadn't considered the possibility that Andrew or Clyde might be involved. But what the hell? Cast a wide net, right? I took a shallow breath and jumped in with both feet.
Yeah.
Even as I was saying this, I was thinking to myself that I had a lot of nerve making such an accusation. There was a really good chance that the webmaster was Bart Cohn. There was also a chance that the webmaster was someone entirely out of the loop. And there was pretty much no chance that the webmaster was Andrew or Clyde.
So, I said, doing some mental knuckle-cracking, it isn't you, is it?
He was back in his chair, and he was stunned. His mouth was open, his eyes were wide and blank, and a red scald rose up his neck into his cheeks.
Are you crazy? He shouted. Do I look like a killer?
I had a vision of Ranger listening to this in the Porsche, laughing his ass off.
Just asking, I said. No reason to get huffy. Get out. Get out now.
I jumped out of my chair.
Okay, but you have my card and you'll give me a call if you want to talk, right? I have your card. Here it is.
He held the card up and tore it into tiny pieces.
That's what I think of your card.
I left Andrew and I scurried down the hall to Bart. The door to his office was open, so I peeked inside. Bart was at his desk eating lunch.
Can we talk?
Is it important?
Life and death.
He had a sandwich, a bag of chips, and a can of Coke in front of him. He took a chip and watched me while he ate.
And?
He asked. I gave him the same suave spiel.
I know about Lillian Parisi, I said. I know she was part of a killing game.
Do you have proof of this?
Yes,
sort of.
I also know about the current game, and I think the game organizer works in this building.
Bart didn't say anything. His face showed no emotion. He selected another chip and chewed thoughtfully.
That's a serious accusation.
It's you, isn't it? You're the webmaster.
Sorry to disappoint. I have no knowledge of any of this. I'm not a webmaster, and I'm not involved in a killing game. You're going to have to leave now, and you can talk to my lawyer if you want to continue this conversation.
All righty then. You have my card?
I do.
I backed out of Bart's office, turned, and was almost knocked off my feet by Clyde.
"Oh, geez," he said, grabbing for me. "I heard you were here and I came looking for you. I guess I wasn't watching where I was going. Shit!"
He clapped a hand over his mouth.
"Sorry, I meant to say shoot."
I took a step back. "No problem. I'm fine."
"Have you had lunch? Would you want to go to lunch with me? I buy. It'd be my treat."
"Gee, thanks, but my partner's waiting for me."
"Maybe some other time," Clyde said, not looking the least discouraged.
"Yeah, some other time." I hustled out of the building, forcing myself to walk, not run, across the lot to the Porsche.
"Very smooth," Ranger said, smiling.
I ripped the wire off and threw it on the dash.
"I'm never wearing one of these again. You make me nervous."
"I wanted to make sure you didn't get abducted into the broom closet and snuffed with a toilet brush," Ranger said. "One of these days, we should talk about interrogation methods."
It sort of went in the wrong direction. I don't know how that happened. I slumped in my seat. "I need lunch. A bag of donuts would be good."
"Would you settle for pizza?"
"No. Last time you took me for pizza in this neighborhood, there were bloodstains on the table." Ranger rolled the engine over and cruised out of the lot.
"You didn't talk to Clyde."
"I talked more than I wanted. I'm afraid I'm going to open the door for the paper some morning and find Clyde sleeping on the doormat." We compromised and went to Pino's for pizza. We were on our way out when my cell phone rang.
"I have a problem here," Connie said. "The police notified the Apusenges about Singh's death over the weekend, and now I have them sitting in the office. They want to talk to you."
"Why me? You were in Vegas. Why can't they talk to you?"
"Mrs. Apusenja doesn't want to talk to me."
"Tell them I'm out of town. No, better yet, tell them I'm dead. Very tragic. Car crash. Oh, no, wait, that would be in the paper. Flesh-eating virus. That's always a good one."
"How long will it take you to get here?"
"Couple minutes. We're at Pino's." 5 minutes later, Ranger parked in front of the office.
"You're on your own with this one, babe."
"Coward."
"Calling me names isn't going to get me in there."
I looked through the large plate-glass window. Mrs. Apusenja and Nani were sitting on the couch, hands folded, stern set to their lips.
"What would get you in there?"
Ranger leaned an elbow on the steering wheel and turned in my direction. And there it was, the eye of the tiger, focused on me. I blew out a sigh and shoved my door open.
"Wait here."
Both women stood when I walked into the office. "I'm very sorry," I said.
"I want to know everything," Mrs. Apusenja said. "I demand to know."
Connie rolled her eyes, and I heard the lock click on Vinny's inner sanctum. I decided it was best to give everyone the abbreviated version. "We had a tip that Samuel was in Vegas," I said. "So Lula and Connie and I flew out."
"A tip? Who would tell you about Samuel?" Mrs. Apusenja wanted to know.
"He applied for a job, and his previous employer was checked as a reference."
"This makes no sense," Mrs. Apusenja said.
"Samuel was living with a woman he met on a business trip," I said. I spoke to the woman, but not to Samuel. Nani and Mrs. Apusenja went perfectly still.
"What do you mean, living with a woman?" Nani asked.
"He listed her house as his residence, and he was living there. I can't be more specific than that."
"I never liked him,"
Mrs. Apusenja said, narrowing her eyes.
"I always knew he was a little pisser."
Nani turned on her mother.
"You were the one who thought he was wonderful. You were the one who arranged the engagement. I told you these things were not done in this country. I told you young women were allowed to choose their husbands here."
"At your age, you can no longer be choosy," Mrs. Apusenja said. "You were lucky to have an arranged engagement."
Nani slid me a look under lowered lashes.
"Lucky to have him disappear and die," she murmured.
Yikes. "Okay, then, moving along," I said. "We learned from the police that Samuel had been shot and killed at the airport, so we went back and got Boo." Okay, so I rearranged it a little. It made for easier telling.
"Boo?"
Nani shouted.
Where is he?
We didn't want to put him on a plane, so he's driving back with Lula. I think they might be here tomorrow or maybe Thursday.
Samuel Singh should rot in hell, Mrs. Apusenja said. He is a dognapper and a philanderer. After all we did for him, can you imagine such a terrible person?
I turned and looked through the window at Ranger. He was in the car, watching with a bemused expression. Ranger found me amusing. He enjoyed watching the Stephanie Plum show. I didn't usually mind. I decided his interest was a mixture of raw lust, curious disbelief, and affection. All good things, and all things that were mutual. Still, every now and then I felt his enjoyment required some payback, and this was one of those times. If I had to deal with Mrs. Apusenja, so did he. Okay, so I was escalating the game, and Ranger would probably take this as a challenge issued, but I deserve to have some fun too, right? Do you see that man in the black Porsche? I asked the women. They squinted out at Ranger.
Yes, they said. Your partner.
He's homeless. He's looking for a place to stay, and he might be interested in renting Singh's room. Mrs. Apusenja's eyes widened.
We could use the income.
She looked at Nani, and then back at Ranger.
Is he married?
Nope. He's single. He's a real catch. Connie did something between a gasp and a snort, and buried her head back behind the computer.
Thank you for everything, Mrs. Apusenja said. I suppose you are not such a bad slut. I will go talk to your partner.
Oh, my God, Connie said when the door closed behind the Apusenjas. Ranger's gonna kill you.
The Apusenjas stood beside the Porsche, talking to Ranger for a few long minutes, giving him the big sales pitch. The pitch wound down, Ranger responded, and Mrs. Apusenja looked disappointed. The two women crossed the road and got into the burgundy escort and quickly drove away. Ranger turned his head in my direction, and our eyes met. His expression was still bemused, but this time it was the sort of bemused expression a kid has when he's pulling the wings off a fly.
Uh-oh,
Connie said. I whipped around and faced Connie.
Quick, give me an FTA. You're backed up, right? For God's sake, give me something fast. I need a reason to stand here until he calms down.
Connie shoved a pile of folders at me.
Pick one, anyone. Oh, shit, he's getting out of his car.
Connie looked like she was going to bolt for the bathroom.
You lift your ass out of that chair and I'll shoot you, I said.
That's a bluff,
Connie said.
Your gun's home in Morelli's cookie jar.
Morelli doesn't have a cookie jar. And okay, maybe I won't shoot you, but I'll tell everyone you shave your mustache.
Connie's fingers flew to her upper lip.
Sometimes I wax, she said. Hey, give me a break, I'm Italian. What am I supposed to do?
I heard the front door open, and my heart started tap dancing. It wasn't exactly that I was afraid of Ranger. Okay, maybe at some level I was afraid of Ranger. But the fear wasn't that he'd hurt me. The fear was that he'd get even. I knew from past experience that Ranger was better at getting even than I was. I grabbed a bond agreement and tried to force myself to read it. I wasn't making much sense of the words, and it was only dumb luck that I wasn't holding the bond agreement upside down when I felt Ranger's hand on my neck. His touch was light, and his hand was warm. I'd been expecting it. I'd steeled myself not to react, but I yelped and gave a startled jump anyway. He leaned into me, and his lips brushed the shell of my ear.
Feeling playful?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Watch your back, babe. I will get even.
Chapter 14. Ranger reached around me and took the bond agreement I'd been holding.
Roger Pitch, Ranger read aloud. Charged with assault with a deadly weapon and attempted robbery. Tried to hold up a convenience store. Attempted to shoot the clerk. Fortunately for the clerk, Pitch's gun misfired, and Pitch took out his own thumb.
I could feel Ranger laughing behind me as he turned to the second page. Connie and I were smiling, too. We all knew Roger Pitch. He deserved to have one less thumb.
Vinny wrote a 5-figure bond that wasn't totally secured because there seemed to be a low risk of flight, Ranger said.
Pitch was a local guy with only one thumb. What could go wrong?
Vinny yelled from his inner office, his words muffled behind his closed door.
God damn it,
Connie said, opening drawers, looking under her desk.
He's got me wired again. I hate when he does that.
She found the bug and dumped it into a cup of coffee.
Pitch didn't flee, Connie said. He's just refusing to show up for court. He's at home watching television, beating on his wife when things get boring.
He's only a couple blocks from here, Ranger said. We can pick him up, and I'll call someone in to shuttle him over to the station.
Roger Pitch was mean as a snake and twice as stupid. Not someone I wanted to tangle with.
Yeah, but Connie has other files. Maybe there's something more fun.
Pitch is a fun guy, Ranger said.
He's a shooter. Not anymore,
Connie said.
He blew his thumb clear to Connecticut. His hand's going to be bandaged.
Connie was right about Pitch's hand being bandaged. The incident happened 3 weeks ago, but the hand was still wrapped in big wads of gauze. Pitch answered the door when Ranger and I knocked, and he calmly accepted that we were bond enforcement.
I guess I forgot my date, he said. It's all these pain pills that got me on. Can't remember a damn thing. Lucky I don't put my pants on my head in the morning.
Ranger and I were both dressed for the visit in full superhero utility belts. Sidearms strapped to our legs, handcuffs tucked into the belt, pepper spray and stun gun at the ready. Plus, Ranger had a 2-pound mag light, just in case we needed to see in the dark. The light could also crack a head open like a walnut, but walnut cracking was a little illegal, so Ranger saved it for special occasions.
Let me just shut the television off, Pitch said.
And then he whirled around, slammed the door shut, and threw the lock.
Fuck, Ranger said.
Ranger didn't often curse, and he rarely raised his voice. The fuck had been entirely conversational, like he was now mildly inconvenienced. He put his Bates boot to the door, and the door popped open to reveal Pitch at the end of the hall with a gun in his left hand.
You're just a couple amateur pussies, Pitch yelled.
Ranger gave me a hard shove to the shoulder that knocked me off the small front stoop into a scraggly hydrangea bush. Then he stepped to the side of the door and drew his gun. Pitch squeezed one off, but he was shooting with his left hand, and clearly he wasn't ambidextrous, because the round hit the hall ceiling. The second round bit into the wall.
God damn! Pitch shrieked. Piece of shit gun!
Pitch had destroyed his thumb with a semi-automatic. And I guess one misfire was enough for him, because he was now holding a revolver. The revolver held 6 rounds, and Pitch fired them all off at us. Ranger and I were counting shots. I was counting while I was trying to disengage from the hydrangea. There was silence after the 6th shot. Ranger stepped into the doorway, gun drawn, and told Pitch to drop his weapon. I climbed onto the porch and saw that Pitch was trying to get another round into the chamber. Problem was, he couldn't do it with the bandaged hand, so he had the gun rammed between his legs, and he was fumbling with his left hand. Ranger gave his head a small, disbelieving shake. Like Pitch was so pathetic, he was an embarrassment to felons the world over. Pitch gave up on the gun, threw it at Ranger, and ran into the kitchen. Ranger turned to me and smiled.
And you said he wasn't going to be fun.
Maybe you should shoot him or something, I said.
Ranger ambled into the kitchen where Pitch was rummaging in a junk drawer, presumably looking for a weapon. Pitch came up with a screwdriver and lunged at Ranger. Ranger grabbed Pitch by the front of his shirt and threw him about 12 feet across the room. Pitch hit the wall and slid to the floor like a glob of slime. Ranger cuffed Pitch to the refrigerator and called Tank.
Send someone over, Ranger said. I have a delivery.
We stayed to watch Pitch get taken away by yet another of the merry men. We secured the house, and we walked out to the car.
You could have told me to move instead of dumping me in the bushes, I said to Ranger.
It was one of those instinct things, keeping you out of harm's way.
Yeah, right. Maybe more like getting even with me for sending the Apusenjas out to talk to you.
Ranger opened the passenger side door for me.
When I get even, it's going to be something much more rewarding than dumping you in the bushes.
I buckled myself in and looked at my watch. My sister came home today with the baby. I should stop around and see how she's doing.
Tank's going to be glad he broke his leg when he finds out how I spend my afternoon.
You don't like babies?
I come from a big family. I'm used to babies.
Well, then?
My grandmother is a little Cuban woman who cooks all day and speaks Spanish. Your grandmother watches pay-per-view porn.
She used to watch the Weather Channel, but she said there wasn't enough action.
Maybe you should check the dose on her hormone replacement. Last time I saw her, she was trying to imagine me naked.
I burst out laughing. That's what happens when you're a hottie. Women imagine you naked. Lula imagines you naked. Connie imagines you naked. 200-year-old Mrs. Bessler imagines you naked.
How about you?
I don't have to imagine. I've seen you naked. Your naked body's burned into my brain. Ranger turned onto my parents' street.
I'm going to wait in the car. And if you send your grandma out to harass me, I swear...
Yeah?
I don't know what I swear. I can't think of anything awful enough to do to you that wouldn't leave you maimed or psychologically scarred.
Nice to know there are boundaries. Ranger parked in front of my parents' house and got out of the car. I thought you weren't coming in, I said.
I'm not. I'm going to stay out here. I can't see the entire street if I sit in the car.
Grandma Mazur opened the front door for me.
Is that Ranger with you? Isn't he coming in?
He thinks he's coming down with a cold. Doesn't want to infect everyone.
Isn't that thoughtful? He's such a nice young man. Lots of times men aren't nice like that when they're hot-looking. Maybe I'll bring him something from the kitchen.
No, he just ate. He's not hungry. And you can't take a chance on getting infected. What if you got sick and gave the cold to the baby?
Oh, yeah. Well, you tell him I was asking about him.
You bet. Valerie was on the couch nursing the baby. The girls were watching Valerie. My father was in his chair, concentrating on CNN. My mother came in from the kitchen, took a look at me, and made the sign of the cross. Your arm is bandaged, you have grass stains on your pants, and pieces of some sort of bush are stuck in your hair, and Ranger is outside wearing a gun. She looked more closely. Is that a wig?
It's my real hair. I got it cut.
With the exception of the baby, everyone stopped what they were doing and looked at me.
Sometimes it's fun to change things, I said. Right? What do you think? It's cute, Valerie said. I wouldn't mind wearing my hair like that, Grandma said. I bet it'd look real good if it was pink.
The phone rang.
Is Lois Kellner across the street, Grandma Mazur said. She wants to know if we're being invaded. She said it looks to her like there's one of them terrorists in our driveway.
It's just Ranger, I said.
I know that, Grandma said, but Lois is calling the army.
My mother did another sign of the cross.
Maybe you should get Ranger out of the driveway, Valerie said. Paratroopers landing on the roof would upset the baby.
Grandma's eyes lit.
Paratroopers! Wouldn't that be something?
I'll try to get back later, I told everyone. I stopped in front of the hall mirror to pick the branches out of my hair and to take a close look at the cut. I'd never before thought of myself as cute. Sometimes I felt sexy, and sometimes I felt downright fat and stupid. Cute was a new one. I opened the front door and waved at Ranger.
Visit's over.
That was fast.
The woman who lives across the street thinks you're a terrorist. She said she was calling the army.
You have plenty of time, then, Ranger said. It'll take the army a while to mobilize.
Ranger drove me back to Morelli's house. We clipped Bob to his leash. I stuffed a couple plastic sandwich bags into my jeans pocket, and we ambled down the street after Bob. Me and the terrorist, out for a stroll with the dog. I feel like I should be doing something to find the carnation killer, I said.
You have state and local police working on it now. They have a lot of resources, and they have some good stuff to trace back. The photos, the emails, the flowers. and now they have interrelated murders. They can re-examine them and look for commonality, and they'll go back through case histories to see if they can find other victims of the game. Your job right now is to stay alive.
I glanced over at Ranger. He'd gone through three of the victims' apartments, plus Bart's townhouse. Have you been through Klein's house?
I went through last night while the police were there.
The police allowed you access?
I have friends.
Morelli?
Juniac.
Joe Juniac used to be police chief. He was elected mayor of Trenton and now was running for governor.
Klein lived with his parents, Ranger said. His room was a typical kid's room. Messy, posters of rock bands, small arsenal under his bed, and a personal stash of pot in his underwear drawer.
You think that's a typical kid's room?
It wasn't my neighborhood.
What about a computer?
Klein had a laptop. His parents said he took it everywhere with him. It wasn't in his room, and it wasn't in his truck. Probably the webmaster took the computer after he shot Klein. Parisi's computer was missing. Rosen's computer was missing. By the time the police got to Howie's apartment, his computer was missing.
Klein slipped up somehow when he took out Singh. He didn't get Singh's computer, I said.
He was probably waiting for Lou to leave, but Ju and Connie and Lula were in place by then.
Bob stopped, hunched in front of old Mr. Gallucci's house, and conversation was momentarily suspended while we watched Bob poop. How embarrassing is this? Poop is not something I feel comfortable sharing with Ranger. Actually, I'm not comfortable sharing poop with anyone. I'm not even comfortable with it when I'm alone. When Bob was done, I scooped the poop up in a sandwich bag. And now the horror continued because I had a bag of poop and no place to put it.
Babe, Ranger said.
Hard to tell if he was horrified or impressed by my poop scooping. I don't suppose you have a dog in the Bat Cave, I asked him.
The Bat Cave is dog-free.
Bob pulled at the leash, and we continued walking. Everyone involved had a laptop, I said. Did they have anything else in common?
Singh, Howie, Rosen, and Klein were all computer geeks and loners. Parisi doesn't entirely fit the profile, but she became a computer junkie when she broke up with Scruggs. Probably there's a connection between her and Rosen. Maybe Parisi talked to Rosen about the game, and Rosen came on board after Parisi was killed. They were all between the ages of 19 and 27. Rosen was the oldest. None were especially successful.
Bart Cohn doesn't fit the profile, does he? Ranger was looking ahead at houses and cars.
Not entirely, but he fits better than Andrew.
Ranger turned at the sound of a car a block behind us, traveling in our direction. He had his hand resting on his gun, and his eyes stayed steady on the car. The car passed without incident, and Ranger dropped his hand off the gun. Andrew lives in a nice mid-range house with his wife. It's a stable relationship. They like to cook. They vacation at the Jersey Shore. They have two kids.
Clyde lives in a rental house on State Street. He shares the house with two other guys. I'm guessing he's known them forever. I found a photo of the three of them when they were in high school. The house is pretty much a wreck inside and out. Thrift shop furniture, broken blinds, refrigerator filled with beer and takeout boxes.
So Andrew and Clyde aren't loner computer geeks?
They aren't loners. I don't know how much time they spend on the computer.
We turned the corner and headed for home. You've been busy using your breaking and entering skills, I said.
I just enter. I don't usually break.
You broke down Pitch's door.
Lost my temper.
Bob hunched again. Oh, for Christ's sake, I said. Morelli was sitting on his front step when we got back with Bob.
Lucky you, he said. A two-bag day.
I think we should stop feeding him.
Yeah, Morelli said. That would work.
He stood and took Bob's leash and looked over at Ranger.
It's been quiet, Ranger said. No shooting, no entailing us, no death threats or poison darts.
Morelli nodded.
Your watch, Ranger said to Morelli,
and he left. The bodyguard thing is getting old, I told Morelli.
Did you tell that to Ranger?
Would it do any good? Morelli followed me into the house.
I have some bad news, and then I have some bad news, Morelli said.
Let's start with the bad news first.
I checked your email account this afternoon just before I left work. You have another carnation letter. It's on the sideboard. I printed it out for you.
I looked at the email. It will happen soon. Nothing can stop it. Are you excited?
This guy's turning out to be a real pain in the ass, I said. Now what's the bad news?
Grandma Bella's on her way over.
What?
She called just as you were coming down the street with Bob. She said she had another vision, and she had to tell you.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
Why didn't you tell her not to come? Why didn't you tell her I wasn't home?
All right, maybe I sounded a little whiny, but this was Grandma Bella we were expecting, and whiny was better than flat-out hysteria, right?
She's coming with a dish of my mother's manicotti. Have you ever tasted my mother's manicotti?
You sold me out for manicotti?
Morelli grinned and kissed me on the forehead.
You can have some, too. And by the way, your hair is cute.
I narrowed my eyes at him. I wasn't feeling cute. In fact, I decided I didn't like cute. Cute wasn't a word anyone would use to describe Morelli or Ranger. Cute implied a degree of helplessness. Kittens were cute. A car stopped in front of the house, and I took a deep breath. Calm down, I thought. Don't want to be rude. Don't want to let them sense fear. There was a knock at the door, and Joe reached for the handle.
Touch that handle and you die, I said. She's coming here to see me. I'll let her in.
The grin returned.
Woman in charge, Morelli said.
I opened the door and smiled at the two women.
How nice to see you again, I said. Come in. We can't stay, Joe's mother said. We're on our way to church. We just wanted to drop this manicotti off.
I took the casserole, and Grandma Bella fixed her scary eye on me.
I had a vision, Bella said.
I looked down at her and screwed my face into an expression that I hope conveyed mild interest.
Really?
It was you. You were dead, just like the last time. You went into the ground.
Uh-huh.
I saw you in the box.
Mahogany? The model with the scroll work?
Top of the line, Bella said.
I turned to Joe. Nice to know.
A comfort, Joe said.
So, was there anything different about the vision this time? I asked Bella.
It was the same vision, but last time I forgot to tell you. You were old.
How old?
Real old.
We have to go now, Joe's mother said. It wouldn't hurt you to come to church once in a while, Joseph.
Joe smiled and gave her and Bella a kiss on the cheek.
Be careful.
He closed the door after them and took the manicotti from me.
Way to go. That was impressive.
I'm fearless.
Cupcake, you are not fearless, but you can bluff with the best of them.
What gave me away?
You had a death grip on the manicotti. Your knuckles were turning white.
Bob and I followed Morelli into the kitchen.
I was old in Bella's vision, I said to Morelli. I guess I can stop worrying about the carnation killer now. And I definitely don't need a bodyguard.
I can hardly wait for you to explain this to Ranger, Morelli said.
I woke up to sun streaming in through Morelli's bedroom window. Morelli was long gone, and Bob was asleep in his place, head on the pillow, one eye open and watching me. I got up, went to the window, and looked out. There was a shiny black Ford Explorer parked two houses away on the opposite side of the street. Not Ranger. Ranger never drove the Explorer. Not Tank. Tank was sitting somewhere in the Batcave with his leg elevated. Probably Cal. Hard to tell at this distance. I took a shower, dressed in a tank top, jeans, and sneakers, and wrinkled my nose at my hair. I had a tube of hair gunk that was a combination of wallpaper paste and mustache wax. I pulled a big glob of it through my hair with my fingers, and my curls stood up at attention. I was a couple inches taller with the gunk in my hair, and I wasn't a real good judge, but I suspected I was no longer cute. A half hour later, I rolled into the office.
Whoa, Connie said at my hair. What happened to you?
I got a haircut.
I hope you didn't give him a tip.
Am I cute?
That's not the first word that comes to mind.
Vinny stuck his head out and grimaced at me.
Holy shit, what'd you do, tag yourself with the stun gun? I wouldn't show that hairdo to your mother if I was you.
And he went back into his office. I didn't think it was that bad, I said to Connie.
You look like you soaked your head in liquid starch and then stood in a wind tunnel.
Vinny jumped out of his office.
I got it. I know who it is that you look like. Don King.
And Vinny jumped back inside and slammed and locked his door. I felt my hair. It was pretty stiff. Maybe I overdid the hair gunk.
Oh, my God, Connie said, looking out the big front window. It's Lula.
Sure enough, the red Firebird was parked at the curb, and Lula was at the door with Boo under her arm.
What did I miss?
Lula wanted to know, coming over to the desk.
What's going on? Did I miss anything?
I didn't know where to begin. There'd been death, birth, sex, and hair loss. Lula shifted Boo on her hip.
Are you still looking for that carnation guy?
Yep, I said. Haven't found him yet. I tried calling you, but your phone wasn't working.
I stopped to take a break, got out of the car, the phone fell on the ground, and the dog peed on it.
You made good time, Connie said.
That is one motherfucker long trip, Lula said. I was in the car for 8 hours, and my ass was asleep when I hit Little Rock, and I said, stick a fork in me, cause I'm done. So I handed the rental car in, and I hooked up with a couple truckers who drove day and night. And here I am. They dropped me off late last night.
Connie took a closer look at Lula.
Did you lose weight?
I lost 10 pounds. Can you believe it? All you gotta do is eat meat all day. I've eaten so much meat in the last 5 days, I can't remember ever eating anything else. I got meat oozing out my ears. And to tell you the truth, I'm starting to feel funny about all this meat. You don't think I could turn into like a meat vampire or something, do you?
I never heard of a meat vampire, I said.
For the last couple of days, my teeth have been feeling funny. You know, like they're growing. Just these two ones in front. What do they call them? Canines. And then I was looking at myself in the mirror this morning when I was brushing my teeth, and I was thinking they look bigger, like vampire teeth. Like I'm eating so much meat, I'm turning into a carnivore, and I'm getting dog teeth.
Connie and I were speechless.
What happened to your hair? Lula asked me. You look like Don King.
Yes, but I'm not cute, I said.
Fucking A, Lula said.
Lula and I packed off in my car and headed for the Apusenjas. Boo was on Lula's lap, ears up, eyes bright.
Look at him, Lula said. He knows he's going home. Isn't it something the way dogs know these things? I tell you, I'm going to miss this little guy.
Lula cut her eyes to the rearview mirror.
Looks like you still got a bodyguard.
I turned and squinted back at the Explorer. Cal was behind the wheel. And he had someone riding shotgun. Great. Now I had two babysitters. I whipped out my cell phone and called Ranger.
Lula's back, I told him. So thanks anyway, but I don't need Cal.
He's staying, Ranger said.
I can take care of myself. I want you to tell Cal to stop following me.
The Carnation Killer isn't going to move on you when you're so obviously guarded. He doesn't want to shoot you in the head from a distance. He wants to play with you.
Yeah, but this is really annoying, and it could go on forever.
Not forever, Ranger said. Just long enough for the police to do their thing. They have some leads. Having Cal in place buys them some time.
Grandma Bella said I wasn't going to die until I was real old.
That makes me feel so much better, Ranger said,
and he disconnected. I parked in front of the Apusenja's house. Lula leaned forward and adjusted the rearview mirror and checked out her teeth.
You're starting to creep me out with this teeth stuff, I said.
How do you think I feel? I'm the one turning into a creature.